It's Monday, April 8th, and beyond a shadow of a doubt, this will be something worth seeing. We start here. A nation prepares for its most spectacular solar eclipse of a generation.
The difference is flying in a plane and jumping out of one.
So what makes this so special? We'll make sure you feel a bit brighter on the big day. Israel starts withdrawing troops from a flattened Gaza town.
We've heard from the IDF saying the war in Gaza continues. We are far from stopping.
Does this represent a strategic shift or something else? And she got next.
Perfection with a touch of sweet redemption.
Why this one shining moment for women's basketball could lead to much more. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. The last time you would have seen a total solar eclipse in this country was 2017. You might remember scenes like this.
This is the most incredible thing I've ever seen. It's a once-in-a-lifetime moment.
Back then, I went to see this event firsthand in a little town called St. Joseph, Missouri. From Oregon to Missouri to South Carolina, people were going nuts.
You can feel the energy. It's palpable.
It's the most unusual feeling.
By the end of it, I was right there with them. I had become an eclipse believer. And I think for anyone who's not an astronaut, this is as close as you get to something that feels truly otherworldly.
Wow. Oh my God!
There's something really primal and amazing about seeing something, a celestial event like this, happen with the naked eye.
So let's review what's about to happen today, elementary science class style. Today, the moon is about to pass right between the sun and the earth, which might not be that big of a deal under different circumstances. Because think about it, if the moon was much closer to us, it would look larger than the sun. We'd probably see this sort of thing all the time. If it was farther away, it would just be a little dot going across the sun. But because of this beautiful astronomical coincidence, they appear exactly the same size in the sky, one perfectly covering the other. When they overlap right above you, some incredible things happen. The sky darkens. You see what looks like a sunset, but it's 360 degrees around you. You start to understand why, hundreds of years ago, people would think the world was ending when they watched one of these. It's that impactful. Well, today, this phenomenon will soar through America's cities, parks, and backyards once more. It's an exciting day, so I want to get some tips. For those of us who will be outside, I want to start this exciting day with someone who knows all about solar eclipses. Ryan French is a researcher at the National Science Foundation's National Solar Observatory in Colorado. He's written a book called The Sun, The Beginner's Guide to Our Local Star, and he specializes in solar flares. You can tell he is jacked up for this because he traveled to Texas to witness this firsthand. Ryan, thanks for joining us from Texas this morning. Why is this such a big deal? Can you explain what makes this different from even other eclipses?
Yeah, thanks, Brad. Happy to be here. So the key thing here is the definition of a total solar eclipse. Like the word solar eclipse for eclipse, they're thrown around all the time. They're often overhyped. But the real deal is the total solar eclipse. Most viewers have, or listeners, I should say, have probably seen a partial eclipse at some point in their life. This is when the moon partially blocks the sun. But the difference between a 99% partial eclipse and a total eclipse is, honestly, it's equivalent to flying in a plane and jumping out of one. It's a completely different story and a completely different experience.
I was just about to ask, like, there's people who are going to see a partial eclipse today all across the country, right?
Yep.
I think New York's going to be 85%. You're saying a completely different thing.
It's a different thing. Like, it's still a worthwhile thing to see. You're still going to see the moon partially block that sun. If you've got eclipse glasses or some sort of solar filter, you'll see a crescent sun, which is really cool to look at. A really other fun way to experience this is go outside and create some shadows. Either poke some holes through a sheet of paper, make some shadows through your hair, like leaves in the trees, and you'll see the shadows are shaped like the crescent sun. So it's a really weird experience for that. But for everyone living in the path of totality, where they'll see the total solar eclipse, the sky will go pretty dark. You'll see stars, you'll see planets, and that's the only time the human eye can see the corona of the sun.
Yeah, wait, can you just explain what the corona, explain like the actual phenomenon, like what is the corona and what am I seeing around the edges?
Sure, so the sun has an atmosphere. It's called the corona. The corona of the sun is where we get solar flares. It's where we get coronal mass ejections, but we can't really see it with the human eye. The sun is just way too bright. The sky is too bright. So the only time the human eye can see the atmosphere of the sun is when the moon is blocking it.
Yeah, and describe what that's like, because I do feel like the most common question you're going to be asked today is like, but really, why is it so interesting until the moment it happens? So, I mean, what is that like when it happens?
Yeah, so not like completely nighttime, but think sort of after sunset, dusk, you can see the brightest stars have started to appear. Jupiter, Venus will be visible in the middle of the day, and the brightest stars as well. And because it goes so dark so quick, animals genuinely mistake it for nighttime. So I've heard stories of people who have chickens that have gone home to roost. Some places, bats or cicadas come out around that time. Other people sort of explain strange behaviors with their dogs or their horses. So I'd be genuinely interested to know if you have pets and you're under the path of the eclipse, I'd love to hear what your pet does, because it's kind of an understudied thing how animals act in these conditions.
And walk me through then exactly what's going to happen as far as the path of this. Like what? So there's a very specific path this thing is taking.
There is.
Where and why, I guess.
Yeah, so the path is, it's a narrow path. It's about 100, 110 miles sort of across. And it moves across North America at a rate of about 1,000 to 3,000 miles per hour. So it crosses the Pacific Ocean. Hawaii will actually see a partial eclipse before anyone sees anything. And it crosses, makes landfall in Mexico in a city called Mazatlan, then crosses the border into the U.S. around Eagle Pass, then passes up through the U.S. all the way to the top right corner, going over a few major cities along the way. Goes through upstate New York, Rochester, Buffalo, up through into Maine, and across to Canada as well. So it's a fairly narrow path, but I think 31 million people live under that path, and millions of other people I know are traveling from outside to witness the event.
What's your favorite piece of eclipse trivia? As somebody who thinks about these all the time, what are the things, I'm asking you all the basic questions, what are the things you're like, no, this is what you guys need to know about these things?
So I think it comes down to the rarity again. Like we see these things on the news, it's fairly easy to think it's not a special event. But talking about just the United States alone. So we have this eclipse coming up today, April 8th. There was an eclipse in 2017, but the previous total eclipse anywhere in the US was way back in 1979. Anywhere in the country. So there have been partial eclipses. There were ring of fire, which is a special type of partial eclipse. But total eclipses are really rare. And statistically, the chances of it occurring sort of over your town, like a given location on the world, only gets an eclipse every 375 years on average. So the next one anywhere in the US is the very top of Alaska, where no one lives, in 2033. But the next one in the mainland, sort of lower 48 states, not till 20 years from now.
Wow.
So if you miss this one, you've either got to travel somewhere else or just wait 20 years.
Unbelievable. And then when, like, to actually look at the thing, you're saying if it's a partial eclipse, don't look up at the sun at all. What if you do live in the path of totality? Can you look straight up at it or what?
Yeah, so if you're in the path of totality, you'll first get the partial eclipse sort of leading to the total eclipse. And that whole process takes like an hour or two. And then for the 4 minutes where the moon has fully blocked the sun, where there's no sun, it's just the moon and the atmosphere of the sun, then you can look directly. But before and after that period, or if you're anywhere else where it's viewing the partial eclipse, you will need to either use safety viewing glasses or use this projection method that I mentioned before.
And like not sun, you don't mean sunglasses, you mean like
specific
welder style,
you know,
glasses.
You've seen them around, these sort of solar eclipse glasses, these special sort of filter papers. You can actually use welder's masks, specifically if they have a shade of 12 or more. It's sort of the official safety requirements for looking through welding glasses.
Any other tips for people who are just looking, whether it's partial or total, any other tips for how people sort of go through? You've done one of these before, I believe.
Yeah, so my advice would be go out with your friends, right? If you have pets, take them along, why not? And just, you know, experience it together. You'll probably, after you discuss afterwards, you'll notice there are different aspects that maybe you noticed that your friend didn't. Maybe you say, oh, did you see this funny twisting structure that I saw in the corona of the sun, or this little red thing that was just popping over the moon? And just take time. And this is maybe a slightly strange thing to say in 2024, but don't experience it solely through your phone. Like, it can be tempting to hold the phone up and the whole time be snapping pictures. Snap pictures if you want, take a few, right? But be sure to put the phone down for part of it and just experience it, because it is something unlike what you will have experienced before.
Unbelievable. All right. Ryan French from the National Solar Observatory, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Next up on Start Here, Israeli troops are stepping back, but this might not be what the U.S. had in mind. We'll take you to Israel after the break. With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November. And while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here. We've talked about how the Israeli strike that killed 7 aid workers in Gaza last week has continued to impact American attitudes towards Israel.
At what point did it sink in for you, the enormity of this loss?
Well, has not sunk in yet.
This weekend, you could see that on full display as ABC's Martha Raddatz sat down with Chef Jose Andres, the leader of that aid group, World Central Kitchen.
The grief is going on, especially the members I knew closely.
Andres, who became an American citizen more than a decade ago, wept as he described his team members.
I spent a lot of time with her in missions. She was always a joy. And was a very beloved member of the community. She's like a sister.
And as we've seen throughout the Middle East for months and really years, the grief then turns into anger.
This doesn't seem a war against terror. This doesn't seem anymore a war about defending Israel. This really, at this point, seems it's a war against humanity itself.
He expressed frustration that the IDF is leading the investigation into itself. He noted that this sort of thing has happened to so many civilians, so many aid organizations beyond his own. And he claimed that while he'd like to think this was an innocent mistake, the evidence in his eyes just doesn't support that.
That the convoy was deliberately attacked is obvious. The precision, the continuous following over 1.8 kilometers until the 3 cars were totally destroyed and all the members inside those 3. Obviously, this was a targeted. We could argue that the first one, let's say, was a mistake. The second, the third.
The White House has said it wants changes from Israel, but no one was clear what Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu would be willing to do. Well, this weekend, we started seeing some noticeable shifts on the ground. So let's take you to Israel now. ABC's foreign correspondent Britt Klenet is in Tel Aviv right now. Britt, what steps are Israelis taking?
Well, for its part, Israel says it's reopening the Erez crossing into northern Gaza, where people desperately need food, water, medicine, and they're also temporarily using Ashdod port in southern Israel. And that's all following the U.S. demands to increase humanitarian aid supplies into Gaza. Then we saw this big announcement, Israel saying it's withdrawing its ground troops from southern Gaza in preparation for future operations, including what we're expecting will be a ground offensive into Rafah. Now, Israel leaving the southern city of Khan Yunis after the IDF says Hamas ceased to exist as a military framework there. Khan Yunis, Brad, it's been under Israeli bombardment for months. And the city and surrounding area, it's now largely destroyed. Residents returning there saying they're coming home to wreckage, devastation. One person saying it's a shock. The destruction is unbearable.
Wait, and so in Khan Yunis, that's different from the city of Rafah, right? So I'm trying to figure out if Israel's scaling back when they say they're withdrawing their troops from this area, or if that just means they're moving them around a little.
As I say, Khan Yunis has been under Israeli bombardment for months, but Rafah is the southernmost city. That is where around 1.3 million people, Palestinians, displaced Palestinians, have kind of run to. That's where they fled to from the central and northern areas for safety.
Only God's will is what keeps us alive. The aid coming in is not enough, and the people are not fed.
Now Israel's saying you might have to move again. But to be clear, we've heard from the IDF saying the war in Gaza continues. We are far from stopping. And an IDF official telling ABC News that some forces do continue to operate in the Gaza Strip to preserve its freedom of action. So no, in fact, we're expecting an invasion into Rafah to happen any time soon. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has said there cannot be victory without going in, that this is the last stronghold of Hamas. So this might actually be Israel regrouping its forces for Rafah. It can kind of be interpreted as tactical rather than a sign that this war is slowing down.
The major military operation in Rafah should not proceed without a credible plan for ensuring the safety and support of more than 1 million people sheltering there.
This idea of a Rafah invasion, I mean, that had sparked international concern even before the deaths of these World Central Kitchen workers, right? So, I mean, what would that sort of invasion look like? And I guess, what is the perspective of the U.S. when it comes to Rafah?
Right. So Rafah has been a major sticking point in U.S.-Israeli relations.
We have been increasingly frustrated.
White House spokesperson John Kirby reiterated very clearly that it was Israel's responsibility to reduce the number of civilian casualties if and when Israel goes into Rafah.
As the president made clear to Prime Minister Netanyahu, we got to see some changes in the way they're prosecuting these operations, or we're going to have to think about making changes in our own policy towards Gaza.
And so far, Brad, we haven't seen any commitment, serious commitment from Israel that it will protect aid workers. Several aid operations have paused operations into Gaza, and it's not clear when they'll start again. So there are huge safety concerns for aid groups operating there.
Well, and so yesterday marked 6 months since October 7th, right? So that means Israel has effectively been at war for the last 6 months. When you talk to people, I mean, what are they looking to have happen? I mean, is there a disconnect between them and the Netanyahu government right now?
Look, I think that anger is growing at home for Netanyahu. We have been going to these protests night after night, and they want to see these hostages returned home.
I'm calling everybody, don't forget them. Do everything to bring them back home.
6 months later, and many are frustrated with the lack of progress on that front.
Do you think Biden should stop the supply of weapons to Israel?
I think, and again, it's my personal opinion, and I am biased because I'm a pacifist and my grandfather was a peace activist. This war has to end. I can't even call it a war. It's not a war anymore.
And I speak to many families who say they are sick of hearing that these negotiations have started, getting their hopes up, only to find out that no deal has been made.
It needs to end any way possible.
All right, Brick Lennett there in Tel Aviv right now. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Okay, one more quick break. When we come back, it feels like a whole sport just went undefeated. One last thing is next.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
And one last thing. The NCAA Men's Basketball Championship is tonight, but for many Americans, it might be considered an afterthought to the main event.
Perfection with a touch of sweet redemption. Undefeated South Carolina has won its third national championship.
The South Carolina Gamecocks won the women's national championship yesterday, cementing a perfect season in what many consider the greatest women's college basketball season ever played.
Clark yet to score in the second. We'll put up a three here. And hit.
To do it, South Carolina took down the sharpshooter Caitlin Clark and her Iowa Hawkeyes, and this game was just an epic advertisement for women's hoops. It was a perfect example of why this sport has exploded in popularity. First of all, this championship storyline. Caitlin Clark is the greatest shooter in college basketball, a sniper from long range who's now scored more points than any man or woman in NCAA history. It was Clark who derailed South Carolina last year. This was payback. But to really get people to pay attention day in and day out throughout the sport, you can't just have one star. You need several storylines. And for storylines, you need lots of great characters. In an age when most basketball fans can't name more than a couple guys in the college game, that is what the women's game has really delivered lately. True characters. In the semifinals, Clark battled Paige Beckers from UConn. Well, she herself has battled back from injuries to become one of the nation's most electrifying players.
Beckers! Twisting into the lane. Becker's not going to miss that one.
She's not just driving the lane and raining threes. She's also blowing kisses to the camera. She's got personality for days. South Carolina center Camila Cardozo is a 6'7" Brazilian who's swatting blocks left and right. Her coach, Don Staley, encourages emotion from her players. In fact, she was weeping with them after the final whistle last night.
You have to let young people be who they are, but you also have to guide them and help them navigate
Here's my favorite type of character. You got the hero slash villain of the bunch, Angel Reese from LSU. She's one of the game's best rebounders and also one of its most epic trash talkers.
When I get between those lines, like, we're not friends, we're not buddies. I'm going to talk trash to you. I'm going to do whatever it takes to get in your head the whole entire game. But after the game, we can kick it. Like,
she's also a style icon. She announced her decision to go to the WNBA draft this year during an interview with Vogue. And here's what's wild about how rapidly the women's game has evolved. Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese don't actually need to leave school right now to make big bucks. Now that student athletes are allowed to strike sponsorship deals, each are thought to be making millions right now. Several of these players are harnessing the power of social media in the locker room. That pot of money could potentially be even larger for future players. This year's ratings skyrocketed past anything the women's game has ever seen. More people watched Friday's semifinal between UConn and Iowa than watched any World Series game last year. And next spring, a new TV rights package goes into effect. Broadcasters will want to get their money's worth out of that, which means even more publicity, even bigger spotlights. And if yesterday taught us anything, this crop of players loves a spotlight, and they thrive under pressure. Hey, and I should say, get outside today if you can. The eclipse will last a maximum of 4 minutes and 38 seconds above your head. But outside of that window, ABC and National Geographic are partnering for live coverage for 2 hours. It's going to be an incredible show. Our whole ABC team is fanned out across this 1,000-mile path of totality. They got their glasses, so I hope you will watch Eclipse Across America. It starts at 2 p.m. Eastern. It's on ABC, on Hulu, Disney+, Nat Geo, all the places. This is going to be fun. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.